but I do clean my keyboard every day, and it doesn't do that on any other distro. So it's not like pressing.
What are you doing that requires you cleaning keyboard?
I use my laptop for 9 hours a day. Shit gets dirty. Okay.
Everybody you know knows that Plasma is the future of the Linux desktop. For the Linux geek, for the Linux hipster, and I'm having some fun, but I actually think that maybe this could be somewhat true for the Wayland hipster. When you look at the transition to Wayland, and you look at the future of the Linux desktop, and you look at cross-platform toolkits like Qt, it seems like Plasma has a good shot. And so I thought it was worth talking about. Because on May 30th, which is a few days ago, Jonathan Riddle announced the release of Plasma 5.10, and here's the new slogan. And I don't really want to talk much more about it beyond this, because I actually think this really matters. Simple by default, powerful when needed. Beard.
Yeah, it's pretty much how it's been for me.
So say Jupiter Broadcasting was to drop a Core i7, 6-core, 32-gigabyte rig on your doorstep. And Jupiter Broadcasting was going to encourage that you run Linux. Would you deploy Plasma?
Yeah, probably. I think it's a... Some people would say it's a heavy desktop. I would say it's a desktop that gives you a lot of options.
Well, powerful when you need it, but simple by default.
Yeah. Well, I feel like that slogan is 80% of the way there now, because I feel like...
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
I feel like it can be simple, but if you stray away from that simplicity at all, you get overwhelmed with options. Yeah. And sometimes there's the same option in multiple locations.
Yeah. What's encouraging to me, having watched now for a couple of releases, because I have sort of a privilege doing the videos, I kind of get like the script a couple of weeks before release, and every single time, legitimately, I read that script and I go, well, shit, I'd like that. I would really like that. That seems like a great idea. I'm so glad they're doing that. And that has been the case now for like 3 videos in a row. They have a cadence right now of nailing the release cycle and nailing features that people like myself, and I think like you, really genuinely like they're really on a streak right now.
Yeah. And then on top of that, the complaints I do have with the desktop, it seems like every iteration I have less and less of them. They are taking care of them instead of ignoring them.
I agree.
And I feel like there's a lot of desktops out there that are just ignoring some
or
of the
doing
issues.
Their own thing, and maybe they'll get your complaint, maybe they won't.
Yep.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, having now experimented more using Intel graphics and using the Nuvoo drivers under Wayland, but primarily doing all of my experimentation with the Intel graphics, Plasma is really the desktop where I feel like there's no compromise using Wayland. I feel like no compromise exists, where that's not necessarily true for the other ones.
I think that with the exception of maybe Mate, KDE is the group that has the best pulse of what the community wants.
What I found is I switched to Antrios and subsequently GNOME, actually, because that's what Jupiter Broadcasting was using. So if everyone else was jumping in on KDE Plasma, I would be willing to do it, not necessarily because I have a particular desire for the desktop or I think it fills a particular need for me, but because if I'm using the same thing that everyone else is using, the people that are around me, people like Rakai, people like you, when I run into problems, you've already solved those problems, or Rakai has already solved those problems. And so then kind of that in that collective way, I think it betters everyone's experience.
And so this is where I think why the Beard calls you the Walmart user of Linux. And I think you are also awesomely representative of probably the most important demographic. Mm-hmm. Because it's that sort of, it just works and I want to use it as my desktop. Because what I was sort of like tongue-in-cheek doing just now was outlining the reason why the quote-unquote Linux hipster would want to use Plasma. Mm-hmm. The Linux technical user. The user that knows the difference between X11 and Wayland. The user that knows the difference between SSDM and LightDM. Like, that user is the user that cares about all of the things that we just talked about. But the user that wants to sit down, install Ubuntu, and just get their work done is the user that you just represented perfectly. And legitimately,
it is the majority of the users, right?
I agree with that.
I do think, though, that those users will eventually end up on KDE as well.
As they become more sophisticated?
As KDE becomes simpler to use, as their slogan kind of implies that will.
Hmm. Yeah, and they do seem to be making steps every single release towards that. Raphael9 writes, I'm in trouble for using Linux at school. Okay, so I'm using Linux Mint, and I decided to post this here because I don't know what to do. I'm in a computer club at school, and I'm sure you all are familiar with what that is. But one day, the computer club teacher walked in and said, are you using Linux? And of course, I was like, yes. And then the computer teacher said, Linux isn't allowed at school. I said to my teacher, but Linux isn't that bad. It's just something that I'm using. And then he's cut me off and he said, Linux can be used for hacking and you can get into our servers from the terminal. I replied with a kind voice and I said I was just using it for schoolwork. But he got angry and he told me to stop arguing with her. Now, I'm in trouble. And all the other tech people in the district say that, yes, Linux is indeed dangerous, and it's not a good idea for our students to be using it. So now I'm not allowed to bring my laptop, because my laptop only runs Linux, because I wanted it to be secure. And these computers, if you bring it in, will get taken by the school. Meanwhile, my classmates run Windows and all kinds of crazy games on their laptops all the time. Please, what should I do? I don't want to go back to Windows. I hate it.
Well,
What do you think, Beard?
So my initial comment would be their school, their rules. But
oh boy!
But if you want that to change, you need to go and talk to the school IT staff, talk to whoever the hell else is in charge of it, and explain to them why you want to use this and see if they're willing to at least compromise.
Okay, all right, reasonable enough. I completely disagree with everything except for that last bit, but good enough. Noah, what do you think?
Well, first, I think that he or she should determine the teacher's pronouns, because it seems like it flipped there halfway through the middle. Second of all, I would also
assume that he's just gender.
Yeah. The other thing I would do is I might report he or she to some sort of psychiatric evaluation for switching to an Irish accent in the middle of talking. I mean, that's kind of weird too. But then if none of that works, you know what? Honestly, I would do
their country either,
because this works pretty. This seems to be the popular thing to do nowadays. Is you take
maybe
something
that country
you,
flexible?
Maybe they're country fluid. Rika, country fluid. They're nationally fluid. Nationality fluid.
These guys are flexible. Don't you assume their position?
Here's my real answer, though. Here's what I would do. This seems to be really popular nowadays, and I really hate it, but I'm going to go with it. What I would do is I would just weaponize the language, because that's what we do nowadays, is we weaponize language for our beliefs. So you go online, and you shame the school for forcing you to use an insecure operating system.
You make
a post on Reddit, you make a YouTube video, and then you let it go viral, and the school will get so much hate.
They post on the Ubuntu forums.
Oh yeah, no, it has to be Reddit.
Nobody goes
no,
there.
No, exactly. You gotta go to Reddit, and then what will happen is a bunch of people will call the school. People like Richard Stallman will, you know, all and all of his guys, they'll all get involved, and they'll all like shame the school, and they'll talk about how terrible it is, and how they're abusing this child, you know, and then it will turn into this big thing, and the school have no choice but just come through social pressure, like CNN did when they fired that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but he's right. This is how modern America works.
This is how modern America works. We modernize, we weaponize language, and then we use it against people.
Chris's explanation is going to be, you go on Twitter and you post a tweet, get 10 million retweets.
All you guys have the most douchebaggy responses ever.
Well,
first of
we're
all,
just trying to
I'm
think
just
of what
to solve
you
the
say.
Problem. That was good. He didn't miss the beat.
First of all, fuck you guys for trying to use social shaming. That is some weak shit right there.
It's not weak. Just ask CNN. It works.
And second of
all right, go back.
Ask Bill O'Reilly. It works.
I want to help this guy. I want to help Raphael.
I think I gave good advice. Well,
I gave good advice too.
Fuck you.
It sucks bad. Here's the two things you got to do. One or two things.
You know what?
It's really simple.
Hang on. Before you go with that, I feel like I said exactly what you did in high school.
What was that?
You went to the, you did IT shit. for the school.
Well, I completely agree with that part of your advice. You should work within the IT district.
Within the system.
Yeah, work within the system to educate them and do it on a geek level where, hey, this is a cool thing, and that will work. But in the meantime, do one of two things. Get a Chromebook or get a Windows 7 machine.
And hack your school district.
No, use X2Go. Seriously.
What are you talking about? And you thought, and you said my advice was bad?
They're gonna go and look over their
shoulder. Your answer to the guy who wants to use Linux.
You set up a hot keyword, hides it down, and there's
our advice is bad, but your advice is to go use a Windows box.
No, stop it.
He said use a Windows box. I got triggered. Next, he's gonna tell us to use a Windows box to remote into his Mac server with a virtual Linux instant. Oh, jeez.
Even saying
why not though? Why not, Noah?
Because it's Windows, dude. He wants to get away from Windows.
Stupid Windows box with basic installation as your dumb client, and then when they say, "What are you running, son?" You say, "Windows 7 box."
I tell you what.
Sir.
Here's what you do. You do that. You do it. You do it for a week, and then you use a Windows 7 box and remote into whatever computer you want to use. You do that for a week, and then come back and tell me you still think that's a good idea.
Noah here, but for a completely different reason.
Okay.
I feel like you're telling them to bring their Linux to school on their Windows system and then act all crazy and paranoid, looking around them all the time to see if anybody's coming.
That's what I recommend.
So they can hide their Linux shame.
Yes. Hey, man, that's what we did back in my day.
This is 2017, Chris. We show our shame proudly.
Here's the thing, Rikai. Back in my day, you snuck the Linux in, and then you just let it go from there. You snuck in the Linux in, and so
yeah, there's no sneaking in 2017. You're direct, or you don't do it.
There was a period of time where I was working for a Christian MMO with Brian Lunduke.
Okay.
And we were working on this MMO that was going to go nowhere. I think we both knew it.
You snuck Linux into it?
Well, no, I had another job. I had another job. I had a job at a school district that required that you use Windows. But Brian and I had work to get done. The school district didn't have really anything to get done, but we had work to get done. And so what I would do is I would go to the school district, and my two options were run Mac OS on. And this is back when like the MacBooks were all plastic and crap.
So just to be clear here, you got hired by a school district that had nothing for you to do?
Mm-hmm.
I love our taxpayer dollars.
Wait, does that seem weird to you?
No.
Well, when I say just, nothing to do, I mean, I don't mean to say this disrespectfully, but like for government employees, like they might get a couple of tickets that would take them all day and I would bang it out in 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then I'd have nothing to do for the rest of the day. And so I would sit around because it was after I got done contracting for an employer. And when you are a contractor, man, you just bang shit out as fast as possible because the more hours you bill, the more money you make and the more efficiently you can do things, the more clients you can take on. And so I was like, I could get stuff done in the time it would take these school district employees 3 months. I know I'm sitting here jerking it, but I'm just telling you, I had a lot of free time. So I thought to myself, I'll take another job. And Brian needed a server guy.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, you know what? I got the time, man, because this is all over SSH. I can do this. But the thing was I wanted to be able to work from a Linux desktop. So I set up a remote X2Go. It wasn't called X2Go back then. But I set up a remote session, and I connected in from, it might have been like an old crappy MacBook or something, into a Linux box. And I got all my work done on that, no problem. And when somebody walked in and they needed something done for the school district, I would just minimize that Linux box and I would go and finish off the little thing they needed. It was no big deal. It was really actually worked quite well.
I feel like you, as an old man, are forgetting what it's like to be a kid in school.
Wow.
You don't get a choice. If they catch you, you'll get kicked out of the room and taken to the office, maybe suspended.
Oh, no, I understand. Then they're not going to catch him.
Okay. Life's definitely just that simple.
I mean, you know, that is the risk you take, or you run Windows.
Or you just keep running Linux, and then you social shame them.
If you want to kind of run Linux, you could just get a Chromebook.
Yeah, I toss that out as option number one.
Here's a better idea. You could just theme your Linux to look like Windows.
You run a risk there too, though, because if the teacher is remotely smart, you will get doubly in trouble.
No, we're good.
For trying to deceive them.
I think we'll be all right. Yeah, the amount of people even half intelligent people that can tell are pretty slim.
Well, if you have IT people saying that, yeah, Linux is used for hacking and you can get into our servers from the quote-unquote terminal, you got
those are the same guys that look and go, well, it says start, so it must be Windows.
No, what you should do is you should go in there with a Windows box and just do everything from the Windows bash command line.
There you go.
And see what they say then.
Yeah, I want to quit my job too. And look, if you're looking to get out of here, and I understand, why wouldn't you want to? Woo! The problem is you're not hireable, and so you got to get that better. You got to fix that. You go to linuxacademy.com/unplugged. Now, it's not me telling you that. That's your self-doubt. And I don't agree with it, but you're going to have – what? You do?
I do.
Dude, I'm sitting here trying to give these people a pep talk, and you're coming in here with the self-doubt, and then you're going to tell them it's real. That's just going to double down
on the
self-doubt.
Well, if you want to solve your self-doubt, then you just go to Linux Academy.
This is what I was thinking. Yeah. This is what I was kind of thinking is, like, if you got this problem.
It doesn't matter if you got self-doubt or not. You go to Linux Academy, you learn things.
I definitely have performance anxiety when it comes to exams. It is my – I can know a topic top to bottom, but if I haven't pushed myself through the studying process, if I haven't done practice exams, I cannot perform. It's the struggle is real.
It's okay. A lot of men have that issue.
I understand that. And I can totally, totally appreciate the problem. And here's how I solve it.
It's just in your head.
What's that?
It's in your head.
Yeah, well, here's how. I don't even use a pill to solve the problem, no. I don't.
Oh, really? You have a natural supplement?
I go to linuxacademy.com/unplugged, and I use their lab servers. Real world, hands-on experience where I can put the stuff in and get a sense for how it works.
On.
They also have courseware that helps me prepare for those certs that otherwise would give me an anxiety attack. Make yourself better, because the world needs you. Richard Stallman needs you. linuxacademy.com/unplugged. Get your work to pay for it and sign up for a free 7-day trial.
And it's not negative in the freedom dimension.
No. You know what? I think the coolest thing, you know how Linux Academy and Jupiter Broadcasting got originally talking?
Hands.
Before they launched the service, they just were fans of Jupiter Broadcasting and they wanted to be advocates of Linux. And what we were talking about doing was having a how-to on LAS, and then you could do that. You could spin up the how-to on their servers, you know, but with a click in the show notes, because they were messing around and we were experimenting with their lab infrastructure and stuff like that. And then as they worked on their back end and got some really, really incredible educators on board, and they got instructors that could answer your questions, and then they started getting web developers.
Like, they were like, screw those Jupiter Broadcasting guys. We got a good thing here.
Well, and it turned into a sponsorship because we were like, this is great, because we both have the same end goal, more Linux users. And from that, they have created one of the most legitimate Linux training services on the internet. linuxacademy.com/unplugged. Go there to support the show, the network, and sign up for a free 7-day trial. So the birthday came and went. How do you feel, like, say, 1 week after? Because I imagine day of, there's no way around it. It just kind of feels like shit. But a week after, how do you feel?
Well,
it's not quite a week yet, but it's close.
It actually didn't turn out too bad. I got a surprise cake at the door. Apparently, my mom and some of my family ordered me a cake. Unfortunately, it was a super duper mega chocolate cake. I'm not a big fan of chocolate. And it also had coconut layers. I hate coconut. I appreciate the thought. Cake, not so great.
I had a slice, though.
Actually, cake sounds amazing.
Well, it was thick, dude. It was
a chocolate mine.
I would tell you this: if I was buying a cake and I liked those things, this would be one of the best cakes I'd ever had.
It seemed like an expensive cake.
Yeah, it seemed nice. It was like hard chocolate all around the side, coconut in the middle.
It seemed like an expensive enough cake that I kind of felt bad that they got it for me.
But I imagine if I picture the life of Rikai. Your mom sending you a cake isn't where your birthday achievements come from. I imagine like a community online that you socialize with, a lady friend perhaps. Like, how did all of that go for you?
Most people didn't remember it was my birthday.
Yeah, that's always what happens to me.
Yeah, that was kind of shitty.
Does it bother you?
Just a little bit. I like to be remembered.
Yeah, that is the thing, huh? Yeah, I find
like,
that
I don't hold it against them, but it would be nice if they remembered.
For me, I have transitioned more and more as time has gone on to finding it an inconvenience. It's almost like a double-sided sword. Or is that double-sided? Is that the right? You know, because like when nobody remembers, you want them to. And then when everybody remembers, you just want to be left alone. That's how I feel now. Because I get, you know, 30 telegrams. I get a bunch of text messages. And it's just like social media goes crazy because people log into Google Plus and it reminds them of me and Facebook. And I just want to be forgotten.
I want people to remember. I don't care if they message me, because if I did, I'd just ignore them. I would like... Maybe if they offer to do something with me, but wouldn't get offended if I said no.
Oh, that makes sense. Like here, hey, here's a thing, and then you have the gift of the ability to say no with no consequences.
Yeah, without them being like, what the fuck?
That is exactly it.
That's the kind of gift I want.
So I was planning to make you a burger, but I don't think I saw you on your birthday. I think we chatted, but I don't think I saw you.
Probably not.
Yeah.
So Go ahead. I have a friend that he likes people to remember, but he doesn't like the fact that Facebook reminds people. So his birthday on Facebook is actually incorrect. And it gets worse. God. No, wait, it gets worse.
That's going too far.
I'm just starting. It gets way worse. he takes note of who wishes him a happy birthday on his proper birthday as opposed to the incorrect birthday. And then the people that wish him happy birthday on his correct birthday, those people are then remembered on their birthday.
Oh, no.
He's very, very serious about this kind of thing.
I love how Noah took my birthday and made about him and his friends.
Last time I was in Seattle, you generously gave me the inverter that you were using out of your old travel trailer. So I took it back to Grand Forks and took it down to my lab and kind of wired it up to see how it works. And it's actually really neat. It has a little remote plug that you can plug in and turn it on or off remotely. And so I hooked it up to the battery at the front of the RV and plugged in my microwave and plugged in my air conditioner. And, oh, look, it all works. That's great. Okay, that's fantastic. And I thought, okay, so now we have to actually get this solved. And
Hold on. Your air conditioner was able to run off that inverter?
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. Well, it's a 3,000-watt inverter. So the little Honda generator that I use is a little EU2000. Hmm. So I actually have more power on the inverter. So, cool. But the issue was, previously what I had was I had a battery bank in a little wood box, and I would just set it outside the RV. And the inverter that I was using for it was a 1500-watt inverter that's really designed for it's a little 4U inverter that you put inside of a rack, and it kind of functions sort of like a UPS for disaster recovery situations. And so I just taken that and set it on the box, and that just functioned as my outdoor generator kind of a thing.
I'd love to see a picture of that if you have it.
Yeah,
like
sure.
Well, battery box? That sounds cool.
Do you still have that?
I'll buy that off you.
It's a plywood box. It would be cheaper for me to just build one there than it would be to ship it. But it's literally a plywood box that you put batteries in. But anyway, so what I've done now is I took the beds apart, and I am putting batteries underneath the bed. And then I was running it to this inverter, and I was able to charge the RV. Here's the problem, though. The RV was not built for an inverter. So when you plug the AC cord of the RV into the inverter, and the inverter is connected to the battery, the DC converter inside of the RV says, oh, I have AC power. You must want me to charge the batteries, and starts charging the batteries. Well, think about it. Where is that getting the power from? It's getting the power from the inverter. Where's the inverter getting the power from? The battery. So I've created this cycle where it's literally just draining the battery in a circle.
How does the system know that all of a sudden it's received AC power? Where does that connection happen?
That happens in the DC panel.
How does the battery
panel.
Charger know that there's AC power available?
The AC cord for the RV goes into that DC converter panel where the fuses are and the breakers are.
Okay.
So I ordered this box, and I'm sure we'll have a link in the show notes, but basically what it does is you interrupt where the converter gets its AC power from, and you run a separate AC cord into this box, and the box can make a decision. If it has AC power, it then doesn't send power to the charging circuit. And if it does have AC power from an AC power cord, it sends power to the charging circuit. If it doesn't have AC power, then it doesn't send AC power to the charging circuit, but it sends AC power to the rest of the RV. So My guess is if I took your Class A apart, they probably have a similar box. It's a AC transfer switch. So I got that, and that works really great. Okay, so next problem. I ended up running the batteries completely dead because I was, you know, warming stuff up in the microwave and turning the air conditioner on. I thought, okay, things have changed because the...
How many batteries are we talking about here?
I've got one at the front of the RV, and then I've got four under the bed.
Oh, are they 6-volt, 12-volt?
No, they're 12-volt. They're all 12-volt.
Damn. But, okay, so I was trying to figure out like how you could possibly run the microwave off your batteries because the microwave can draw 1,000 watts while it's going consistently.
Mm-hmm. So I get maybe my microwave is smaller.
Might be 800 watts or 720 at the lowest.
I don't know. It definitely doesn't. It could be. I mean, it could be 1,000. The inverter's 3,000. So, but yeah. it runs. It doesn't trip the breaker or the safety switch or whatever, overload protection. So it. So my next problem was I need to have more granular control over, not control, but I need to know more about what the batteries are doing because on the little gauge that they give you for the RV, it just says full, halfway gone, completely empty. Well, there's a big difference between that's like in the mixer world going from like having with the mixers that have it marked at like zero and then negative 20. Like there's a world of difference in between those two. You can't just mark those two. There's things in between I need to know. So I bought a new monitoring thing. It was like $13 off of Amazon. It was actually really cheap. But basically, you put it in between the electrical system, and what it does is it gives you real-time stats about what the batteries are doing. So how many amps you're drawing, exactly what the voltage is of the battery. And so I can kind of watch and say, oh, okay, now the battery is fully charged. Now the battery is almost charged. Now the battery is not charged. And what that has done is it's given me a real-time feed of I can look and say, oh, okay, so that's how much power the refrigerator is drawing, that's how much power the microwave is drawing, that's how much power, you know, this is drawing, and I can say, okay, I don't want to use those, or I want to use that as little as possible, so on and so forth. I really like it. I'm really excited to take it back out and see what it's like at the lake.
While you're out there, has it crossed, I mean, now you're back, mm-hmm. has it crossed your mind while you were there, I mean, this is totally narcissistic of me, but did it cross your mind at all? Like, this is kind of what it's like for Chris to live. Like, I could live like this. Could Sarah and I, could we actually live like this? Any of those thoughts cross your mind while you were out there at the lake in your RV?
A little bit. So mostly I use you as an example more than anything else. So I was out with a couple other friends, and anytime a situation would come up and I would make a suggestion and somebody would say, oh, that would never work. I'm like, well, actually, I have a friend that does this. He lives like this, and it works just fine for him. So one of the first discussion that came up was I was talking to him kind of the same way I was talking to you about why you want to buy DC things, not AC things. Because everyone's – I think their initial thought is if it's like it's just an A or B thing. I could buy AC or I could buy DC. Well, I'll just buy all the things in AC and then just use an inverter, and then it'll be all AC. And of course – you're not taking into account the massive, you know, loss that you're taking in converting DC to AC.
I didn't really appreciate it, but when you convert something from DC power to AC power, you can take like a 40% loss either way.
Right.
Either way, going from AC to DC or DC to AC, a 40% hit in efficiency is the difference between a few devices and one device.
Right. Yeah, so and the thing is, if you look, you can basically find everything that you'd ever want in DC with the exception of I've never found a DC powered air conditioner. But basically everything else you can find in DC. So my wife has a DC powered hairdryer. We have obviously you can find DC powered fans. I have a DC powered food warmer thing. So you know, you can find all these things in DC, and of course then they're way more efficient. I don't have to worry about a generator. I can just run off the batteries, and then you add to that and you start thinking ahead, like you were saying, do you start thinking about what you could do. Yeah, I have thought about if I was going to live like this, what would I do? And the answer is I'd put a bank of solar panels, and then I would charge mm-hmm. that battery bank, and now I don't have to mm-hmm. even worry about any sort of power.
Yeah, this is why I like talking about this, is because even if you live in a house and you can't connect with this particular aspect of like living in like a mobile home, being able to run your most valuable gadgets even when the power's out, all us geeks can relate to that. That's something that everybody can relate to. And what Noah's talking about is stuff that if you start going down this rabbit hole, you'll discover makes sense even in a residential home.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's
It's actually a little bit of a Pandora's box, don't you think, Noah?
I do. And, you know, because what you start to think about is you sit down in your RV, and this happened to me the first time that I ever stayed in an RV was I sat there and I went, man, I went a whole week and I ran off of a single car battery and I used my TV and I warmed food. And so then I started thinking about
furnace and your, and you know, because, you could maybe have propane too. So like you
did have propane,
but it really is kind of remarkable when you think about like environmentalism, even though like you could have somebody like Noah, who's not maybe a huge environmentalist, your footprint during that week is like almost unmeasurable.
So then you start thinking about, well, if I could run off that car battery for a week, what did I really use? And then you start thinking about, well, how much do I pay in power at home? Okay, so what does it take to charge this battery? Well, turns out you can charge a single car battery with a 100-watt solar panel over the course of a day. And so then I start thinking, so if I had two solar panels and two batteries, I could run my entire room in my house on just a battery. So I tried it in my old house before I moved. One of the things I did was I just went down to the breaker and disconnected the power from my bedroom and plugged it into a small little inverter and ran that to a battery and ran that to a solar panel, just set the solar panel outside. And for the last couple months when I was in my old house, my bedroom, the rest of the house was wired in, but my bedroom alone, which I powered a light, my TV and my alarm clock, and I charged my cell phone. Those four things I could run off of it was a two battery bank. I had two batteries and two solar panels, and I could run. And so I start thinking, I'm like, so if I could do two, if it's two solar panels per room in the house, you start to start thinking about how I could do this. And then something like that Tesla whole house battery thing comes along for $1,500 and you go, geez, I could buy that and just, I could save $250 a month on my energy bill.
You know, one of the things that jumps out at me is in your scenario, you just, you know, one or two solar panels, I have one myself. And with one, I can charge my phone, Hadia's phone, my iPad, and I can supply enough power for my NVIDIA Shield. So, and that doesn't seem like a big deal. But if you think about it, if everything stays DC in that entire chain, which your phone, surprise, runs off DC, you can get a device that gives you ubiquitous access to the internet that is charged by the sun. You know, Jupiter Broadcasting has a subreddit. This turns out to be a thing. Didn't know this was a thing, but it turns out to be a thing. reddit.com/r/JupiterBroadcasting, and in there somebody asked, what's the difference between User Air and Linux Unplugged? And here's what I thought.
That's a good question.
Well, I thought it's a horrible question.
You want to know what I thought? I thought, listen to the shows.
Right. But then I thought, you know what the difference is that Linux Unplugged is going to always talk about Linux, which we pretty much guaranteed we're going to have a little Linux in here, maybe a lot of Linux. Like, if there's
depends on the day.
Well, right. Like, if there was a week where something big happened that was really worth talking about, I bet you 90% of the show be that.
Canonical dumps their desktop for no.
But that's already happened.
Yeah.
But you know, at some point, there's going to be like a release that we're going to probably spend a lot of the show talking about. But right now, that's not the case. So, what's the difference between Linux Unplugged and User Air? And I thought the difference was this show would be willing to talk about group sex, where User Air.
This is User Error, Chris.
So this show, User Error, be willing to talk about group sex, and Linux Unplugged would never talk about group sex.
No, they just have it in the mumble room.
This is what happens when you tell rednecks what sous vide was.
Oh, okay. So is this something we can play on the show?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that'd be fine.
You know what's funny about this? The timing of this is kind of funny because the audience and I are collaborating, Dustin in particular, on a sous vide dinner for Linux Unplugged.
Oh, really?
We're going to have a live show on the 4th of July. All right, I'm going to play this. Here we go. I'm going
to
play this.
Okay, so here's a friend of mine says the best way to cook a steak is you take the steak and you put it into a bag, and then you put that bag into a pot of water, and then you put a device in the water that brings the pot of water of water up to a very specific point so you can exactly control the temperature of the steak.
You son of a bitch.
What?
I'm not even going to play that. You son of a bitch.
Is that not how you explain sous vide?
No, it's not how you said it, Noah. It's how you framed it.
What are you talking
First
about?
First of all, I am not.
My friend said, this is how you do this. Never right. mind that. And I was like, this is a great steak.
So, first of all, good. I'm not saying that is the only way to consume steak.
Right.
Second of all, I am not saying that is the best way to consume steak. Third of all.
Come on. You got to be kidding me.
Okay. Yeah. I got to. Hang on. What? Hang on.
That has totally been your position, was that sous vide was the best way to cook a steak ever.
I'm getting super triggered right now, dude.
You should.
To be fair.
I'm getting triggered because I was totally your position up until.
That is the best way to have a steak.
I would challenge any of you to find a clip of me saying that.
It's on last. I'll find it. I'll find it.
The cameras in the living room.
No, I don't even need that. It's, he said we had that conversation on last.
I don't honestly believe
that. You've 100% said that.
I believe the best way to have a steak is to go to Japan. Here, I do not believe the best way to have a steak is via sous vide. I don't honestly believe that.
Go to Japan.
He's talking about the Kobe beef.
Oh. Anyway.
So, I mean, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say it's the best way to have a steak. I don't think I do not believe I have the means to make the best steak
you
possible.
Would you say that is the best way to have a steak in America?
I would say domestically in the Pacific Northwest, the best bet to have a steak would be potentially to sous vide it and then finish it on a
chocolate
barbecue.
So many qualifiers.
Well, yeah, because it's an extremely nuanced thing. A steak is like making love to a lady, dude. It's not a one-size applies.
That I would agree with.
Man, I've met a lot of bad ladies then.
All right, we'll play the rest of this, even though I've been completely triggered. Here we go. I'm a little upset. I'm a little angry, but we will continue.
Let's see
on.
If Noah can pull it back.
Just to paint a picture for the viewer, both these gentlemen are wearing not just camo, but camo hoodies.
Standing in the middle of a field.
Yes, yes. With Noah's child running around.
Roll the temperature of the steak. What do you guys think of cooking a steak that way?
No, you cook it over a fire or on a freaking grill so you get the brown, searing goodness. Flavor.
So you'd brown it after. You would say that you brown it afterwards. Like you just take it out like for a couple seconds on each side.
I never want to hear you say put a steak in a bag and boil it ever again.
Damn it, Noah. That's a total misrepresentation. And you
that
know
is
it.
Not a
second of all, you enjoyed the steak, you son of a bitch.
Well, first
it
of all,
was not
you
bad.
Don't boil
it was not,
water.
It was not a bad steak. I said that. I corrected him.
Do not boil,
listen
by the
carefully.
Way,
I corrected him. And then afterwards...
And he continued to be wrong.
Here, I thought that was sort of appropriate.
If that video triggered you, this video will trigger you.
What are you talking? Noah, don't do this to me right now. I'm trying to have a nice show with you.
Man, I love how Noah's giving us so many videos on this audio show.
I know.
Actually, really, though, all you care about. I mean,
You know what? Actually, we're doing them a favor because some of these videos are vertical. We are doing them a
You know what?
All,
you
have, all I'm saying dude, is Noah's saying that you only need the audio, but sometimes the video paints a scene.
I think the audio, actually, you can hear the steaks like sizzling in the back. I feel like it's actually pretty good just as audio.
You don't see how
look at that. Look at that. You know how good that's going to be? You know how good that's going to be? That's all real average. Man cooked steak, not that sous vide crap.
You are just cooking it on a skillet iron. You're not even cooking it. Like, you don't even have it directly
on
the
grill. Yeah, you know why?
Grill.
Because one of those guys that's in the video pissed on the thing 10 minutes before we started cooking, and it was gross.
Well, I'm sure glad that you give a crap about their opinion of sous vide.
I cannot believe you right now, dude. So first of all, I would sous vide the steak part way, and then I would finish it on a decent
I said that! Rewatch the video!
Hold on. Let's be honest, Noah, and tell me. You feel free to speak up if any part of this is false.
Okay.
The way I would finish a properly sous vide steak is directly over a charcoal chimney.
Yes.
Right on the heat.
In fact.
As fast as possible.
In fact.
Hold on. I am not done yet.
That's okay.
This is being cooked on a skillet on a barbecue. A skillet is being. It might as well be over a propane stove.
No.
I go one step further, Chris.
I am so angry.
I'd
right
say
now.
You just
I am clipping.
Lay it directly on the coals.
He wanted to do that. I stopped him. To be fair, he spent like 2 days. We went to like three different places to go get like the charcoal chimney and the briquettes and all this other stuff. So I'll give you that. I am saying here's how you opened with sous vide. You're like, I have a new thing. Here's a new thing. You know what? And you sent me a picture. Like, can you guess what this is? And then the next time that we got on the air, you're like, I had the crappiest meat from ever from Costco, and I cooked it. And I'm telling you, that was – and I your words. I'm going to go find these for you if you don't believe me. Yep. That was
okay.
The
my heart rate
best
right now is 125
steak.
Beats per minute.
He's not kidding.
I am so upset right now. My heart is pounding in my chest. 108, 109 beats per minute. know it, you son of a bitch, sabotaging bastard.
I'm sorry. I'll tell you what. I'll calm you down. Let me tell you about my new iPhone 7.
Yeah, and baby, how much make me like feel it. Better. Okay.
I got a new iPhone 7, and one of the things I'm most excited about.
Do you have the sous vide add-on for the iPhone 7?
I do. I got the sous vide add-on. Now they had a little headphone jack thing, but it's okay because the Apple one, it was $180, and I got the wireless AirPod
version.
Yeah. And so I was able to pair my sous vide with my phone. Now, here's the thing I like the most about it. The thing I like the most about it is when I'm sitting in an airplane and they make you turn all the wireless things off on Air Canada, you can't use wireless earbuds. And so it's really fantastic to just hold the phone up to your ear.
Well, see,
and watch
the great
movies.
Thing about sous vide, though, is that it just maintains a certain temperature. Hey, so you can leave it. It's good while you're flying.
Do you guys think I should try and sous vide something on an airplane?
Yes.
Because here's the all thing. Right. I was just thinking, I could fit that 3,000 watt inverter in my suitcase.
I feel like if Noah tried to sous vide something on an airplane, he'd end up somewhere
in trouble.
Yeah.
I hate it when this happens. You know, when I have kind of like a flash of how things are going to go and I try to prevent it from happening, and despite my best efforts, it happens anyways. I was recently looking at grandfathered unlimited data plans. Have you heard of this before?
I have. Mm-hmm.
So these grandfathered unlimited data plans, you can buy them on eBay. Essentially, you buy the contract. It's usually around somewhere between $800 to $1,000. It's a lot of money. But it's either through Verizon or AT&T, and it's all you can eat, no throttling. And it's a MiFi. You can put it in your house, and it could essentially be your ISP if you have good signal. Now, who would want that over DSL cable or fiber or whatever, right? Well,
I take it over DSL.
Well, I actually, because I move around, it's been perfect for me. So I have had an AT&T MiFi that is on a grandfather data plan from like iPads from years ago. Unlimited data. Unlimited AT&T data in my RV. It's been great because between AT&T and Ting, which is on GSM and CDMA, I can basically get a full spectrum coverage wherever I go in Lady Jupes. It's been the perfect solution for me until May 22nd, 2017. On May 22nd, 2017, AT&T started throttling unlimited data plans based on network congestion. Which means if they have one or two towers in your neighborhood, they're busy anytime you want to use the internet, which is exactly what's happening to Lady Jupes. So our TV doesn't work. Our Echo doesn't work. Our security cameras don't work. Me doing show research at home doesn't work. Syncing on filter clips can't be done because I'm getting throttled to basically dial up connections all the frickin' time now since May 22nd. So I started digging around, looking at eBay, seeing what was available, see if I can get a Verizon contract. They're all sold. $1,000. $1,000. A good portion of a Bitcoin is what it costs now to buy a contract outright with unlimited data.
When I was out at the lake, I actually have a mixture of things. I have my fair share of Ting phones, but I also have one of the, like you have, AT&T unlimited plans. Mine's the newer one. I don't have to worry so much about the congestion thing because everywhere in North Dakota is not high use. So I never get throttled. And then in addition to that, I also have a prepaid Verizon hotspot because what I found is Verizon really dominates when it comes to coverage. It's just very, very expensive. But if you sign up for one of their 1 or 2 gig things, I think it's like $30 a month for the hotspot. And it's a great way for me to be able to ensure that I can always have access to do Ask Noah. So we actually had a vehicle issue while I was out at the lake, and the throttle body in the truck went out, and it just so happens, you know, redneck can fix anything. So before I even could process the situation of the fact that there was a problem with the vehicle, they were already on the phone. They had called the auto parts guy and had him go to the store and open the store on a Sunday. And then they drove in and got the part and came back and just replaced it for me. But had I not had friends like that to do that kind of thing, I would have definitely had to ask Noah from the lake. And I had all the equipment to do it, but obviously having a reliable internet connection is part of that. So having four different services really, MVNO of Sprint, which is Ting, MVNO of T-Mobile, which is Ting, and then AT&T and Verizon, I'm pretty well covered to basically always have data wherever I am.
Patreon.com/JupiterSignal. Support the show, keep us going, and give us your ideas. We want your ideas for this show at patreon.com/JupiterSignal.
No, fuck those guys.
So I've been looking at the reservations for our Montana trip.
Yes.
And the week you and I just totally agreed on, looks like there's like no spaces available. Well, I don't know yet.
Here's a good news.
I'm going to take another pass out.
Here's a good news. Remember that time that I said basically anytime in July works?
You said that, but I don't want to wait till August.
We don't have to. I didn't say wait till August. I said anytime past July 4th, all the way through August is clear. Anytime in there, before or after, works. It could be before August.
So badass. Oh, man. See, sometimes I think stick with me for a second. Now, this is never going to happen. Imagine we made this studio into a fifth wheel. Okay. Now, originally I was just going to go with a tiny travel trailer, but now picture it. A fifth wheel means we'd have a bathroom and we'd have a bedroom. And so Noah and I, we get out to Montana and then we fly the beard out and you could stay in the fifth wheel. It'd be sweet, dude. These things are like, these things are like apartments on wheels.
Are you telling me that you're going to fly me to the middle of nowhere?
Montana, yeah.
Yeah, the middle of nowhere.
I've always wanted to go to Montana.
And then I don't even get a bedroom. I have to sleep in the studio.
Come on now. It'd be a nice studio.
Chris, back me up on this. I've been telling Beard for months now, he should, when he's looking at different living arrangements, he should really consider something like a small trailer or a tiny house.
Yeah, everybody should. Not just the beard. Everybody should. You need to rethink about housing and tiny homes, and you need to ask yourself, why can't I just live in a travel trailer? Now, if you love having a big place, you love maintaining a roof, you love having gutters, you love mowing the lawn, you love taking out the garbage, you love paying for power and cable and internet and water and sewer and all of these things separately, have at it, Haas. I don't blame you. But if you want to have something that's simple, containable, and movable, why would you not look at these things? I simply don't understand.
The thing is, I don't care about any of those three things.
What?
Simple, containable, and movable.
Simple, though, simple
how about
quantifies
inexpensive?
A thousand things. Like, it's like, simple is so many more things than just, like, one line item. Simple is the hundreds of things as a homeowner that you have to deal with on a monthly basis, if not weekly basis, that you don't have to worry about at all with a tiny home.
I think here's what I think it particularly applies to you, Rika, is if you want to own your own space and you want to own it, you know, sooner rather than later, the thing is you can get into a tiny home for just a couple of $1,000s. In fact, there's now places that are like custom building these things like and they just have them sitting out on a lot. And there's actually a place like right down from the studio. I don't know if they technically are selling them as tiny homes, but they are little like 500, 600 square foot things with a little door and a little window, and you take you take that son of a gun, you go rent some land somewhere, you buy some land somewhere, and you set the thing down, man, you could do that in a couple of months. You could save up the money to do something
like that. I'm not a big fan of the custom-built tiny homes because they're being built by people with variable experience and they have variable resale quality. But, you know, you look at the original Rover that I bought, that little Jayco travel trailer.
Right.
I bought it for like $8,000 and I turned around and I was able to get $8,000 for it because essentially with these travel trailers and things like this, once they reach a certain age, they don't really drop in value anymore because it's not like there's a motor that's depreciating.
Right.
It's not like there is, all these components. It's like it's essentially a standardized part and it just reaches a certain value and it essentially sits there. And so I bought it at that price and I traded it in at that price and it was great for us. And if I wasn't going on road trips a few times a year, I would definitely either be in a travel trailer or a fifth wheel. No way in hell would I get a condo or a house right now, just for me, just where my budget's at. I just never would do it. But the great thing about the travel trailer is I could buy it. My cost would be less than rent would be. And then at the end of that year, I could turn around and I could sell it. And I would essentially walk away with no payments and having had housing for a year. It's super, super economical. And, to that point, the RV industry is seeing a huge growth in sales year over year right now with the quote-unquote millennials. They seem to be buying travel trailers by the most, probably because there's no engine to depreciate. And it's huge growth in sales. Huge growth in sales because it's
a whole new age range that's buying these machines. I don't know if we should put this in the show. It's probably not worth talking about in the show, but it really is an interesting trend to see people going, I don't need an apartment, I don't need a condo, I don't need a house. I can get this. I can go then get a great piece of land, and then from there I can move this in. And so for me too, like, why not get a travel trailer? Well, get a great travel trailer and then get a piece of land.
Mm-hmm.
And then put electricity on that land, and then put water on that land, and then put sewer on that land. And maybe it takes you 3 or 4 years, but you slowly build up this piece of land, and then when you get to a point, the next thing you do is you pour a foundation. And then you build a house. Mm-hmm. And so over 10, 15 years, you've paid off the land. And then as you can afford it, you start building the house. And that, to me, is the perfect opportunity that owning a mobile home offers you. Because if you have a RV, a fifth wheel, a Class A, a travel trailer, a tiny home, whatever it is, you can find these great deals on a piece of land. And then you can build it as you can afford. And you don't have to go all in on a $300,000 two-bedroom condo. You can start with just a piece of land and a travel trailer and then just build it up as you have time, sort of like the build up a PC philosophy where you can, you know, today, even in 2017, you can still custom build a PC. You get the motherboard, you get the parts, you build it up. That's something that I think is obvious to housing, because house costs are getting ridiculous, especially in the Pacific Northwest. They're getting just totally outrageous. And so it's one of these things where it's, for me, with a full-time job, it's out of my reach anymore. It's just completely out of my reach anymore. But this sort of build it as I can afford it approach is very sustainable. And so right now I'm in an RV, and I move around, and I have different pieces of land that I end up on. And those are kind of essentially free. One's part of an annual membership, and one's donated by family. But eventually, I plan to actually purchase a piece of land and park Lady Jupes on there and then build up water, power, and sewer, and then maybe one day build a house on that piece of land. That would be my ideal trajectory right now.
The only other side – I'll just say, just playing devil's advocate. The other side of that is the reason that you got such a good deal on the first Jayco is because some poor sap spent $45,000 on the thing or $30,000 on the thing, and then 3 years later, you know, 4 years later, however old it was, I don't remember.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Realistically, it'd be about $27,000.
Yeah,
going to buy it brand new. But you know, $27,000 is a hell of a lot cheaper than $300,000.
Absolutely. But you know, if you're spending $100,000 or $150,000, the house is going to go up in value. The trailer's going down in value. So
I would not buy a brand new trailer. I would buy it used.
Yeah, I agree. But that was my point, was that trailers are a great deal when, like you said, when they hit the bottom and they don't depreciate anymore. Then you've got nothing to lose, and you get a heck of a deal on it. My point was, if you go in, like, you know, at the upper end of some of those travel trailers and stuff like that, obviously there, you mean, as far as being a good financial decision, your money's going the wrong way.
It is interesting, though, because when I did this move, it started as, well, I would never do this. I would never live in a fucking trailer, okay? I don't own my own business and work my ass off to live in a trailer. I'm not one of those people. And I, on my way to the studio from where Angela lives, I would drive past somebody, a travel trailer, who has a travel trailer and a piece of land, and then they have a huge garden around this travel trailer. And I would think about, I would mock them. What a white trash loser who just parks their trailer in the middle of this garden instead of building a house. And I thought this for about a year, as I would drive between the house and the studio back and forth, judging this person for being such a loser for living in a trailer. And now, 2.5 years later, here I am, and I think it's brilliant, because I've had a total shift of what value is and housing and all of this. And even if I was really financially well off, this is still the approach I would take. This is exactly what I would be doing. I would be doing it at a faster pace, but I would still be doing this exact approach.
See, I feel like I'm coming at it from a different mental angle, because you guys have had large houses for a long time, whereas me, I spent like the past 10, 15 years in a very small space living with other people.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I am ready for
though.
Something larger.
I
having the space. I like being able to spread out. I like being able to have specific rooms dedicated to certain stuff. That's what I want right now.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Yeah, I could definitely see that. I could see, like, you know, if I'd spent that many years in a small space, and then I would want something exactly opposite of that.
Yeah. You know, I guess, again, playing devil's advocate, the way I was kind of looking at it was, take it from two people that have lived in very big spaces. you wind up with rooms upon rooms that just don't have any use. And what you find yourself doing, at least I find myself doing, is being very disconnected from the other people that are in the house. And so
that definitely does happen.
And yes. So, you know, it's actually, I've really enjoyed the time where we kind of shrunken down, and I'm like, it's great to not to be standing in a room of the house and wondering, is anyone else in here? I wonder if anyone else is right. Even home.
Yeah, that is a super, super deep thought.
See,
that I feel like maybe only parents can fully appreciate when you say that. But I'll tell you this, Noah, I've been there, and I've been in the other area, and I want something in between.
Yeah.
Because I've been where Beard's at, and I've been where you're at, and I want something kind of in between.
Yeah, I think I agree.
Yeah, see, me and the person I plan to move in with, we both very much value that isolation in a way.
Mm.
Like, we've both lived with a bunch of people for a long time, and we both kind of like the idea that we can have our own separate spaces where we can just go away and be alone for a while.
Yeah, I definitely find value in that at times, and the way I get that now is I sort of leave the area, and I go for a walk, or I go to work.
You come to the studio and ignore Beard.
Basically. And because right now it's like we have 250 square feet of space.
Yeah.
And for the most part, it actually works out amazing. In fact, like Noah was saying, there is a sort of symbiosis that you develop when you live in a space that size for that long. That is, I think it makes you have to live through life issues and deal with them, because there's no going away. If this is a thing that somebody does that bugs you, you better deal with it, because you're in a small space. So there is like, and if the people in that relationship have the tools necessary to work through those problems, you end up, I think, better. The relationship's better as a person. You end up growing a little bit when you live in a small space. But at the same time, I could absolutely understand that desire to want to have your closed, isolated space, because sometimes when you're trying to do creative work, that stuff really matters. Having that space really matters. I try to get that from outside right now, but it doesn't always work for me. It doesn't always work.
If you're looking for a new phone, head over to last.ting.com. That's right, last.ting.com. Does that URL sound weird? Well, send us a new suggestion. Let us know what you think the URL should be, and we'll see if we can't make that happen. Let me tell you about the latest phone that I am excited about. It's the Apple iPhone 7 Plus. The Apple iPhone 7 Plus from Ting, and it comes, they have the greatest colors. They have black and they have gold and they have jet black, because if you didn't like the black, maybe you needed your black a little more black, and so you can have some black with and you can have jet black or silver.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
I'm not done. Let me tell you about rose gold. You know how rose gold? They have product red. It's not just red. It's product red. That's the better kind of red. And this is all on the iPhone 7. Let me tell you what's great about the iPhone 7. You don't have to worry about which brand is going to cock up your phone, because they all come cocked up from the manufacturer. So that's absolutely fantastic. So even if you're coming up from Verizon or Sprint, you get the same crappy experience when you come to Ting, it's great, right on the iPhone 7.
Yes. Hey, Noah.
Want to use a universal charger? The rest of the world has gone to USB-C, but you don't have to worry about that, because you'll still be stuck on Lightning. It'll be fantastic.
No, to clarify here,
yes.
Noah said if you're looking for a new phone, but if you already have an iPhone and you want to come to Ting, you can bring your phone with you.
You could bring your same crappy phone and have to an amazing service and have better service for your crappy phone. It's great.
Noah, I got a Ting iPhone pitch for you. It goes like this. Did you spend all your money on an iPhone? Say with Ting, pay for what you use wireless. $6 a month for the line, and then you just pay for your minutes and messages and megabytes, and of course that monthly payment on your credit card for your iPhone.
Wow. Wow. Chris, why are you giving Noah a script here? He's freeballing it.
The thing that I'm most excited about is now that they've taken away the headphone jack and you can't plug any accessories into it, they can make it more water resistant, which is fantastic. Yeah. It's almost kind of like the Samsung, except, you know, they don't have a headphone jack. So that's really cool,
right,
too.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Really love it. Really like the iPhone 7 for only $769 for a 32-gig phone. That's a fantastic deal. That's only about twice the price you pay from any other manufacturer. So I think to get the half-eaten apple on the back, that's really incredible. Oh, let's look. Oh, wait, there is no 64 gig, so you have to go to 128, and that it's only $900, 868 to be exact. So that's fantastic. Oh, and it looks like that you can finance it, so you can actually you don't have to use a credit card, Chris. You can finance it through Affirm for $37 a month. So
which would literally cost more than your Ting line.
It'll only take you 2.5 years to pay.
$69 divided by, let's see here, $37 a month. So that's 32 months divided by 12. So you'll only be in debt.
It's almost like two and a half years.
Yeah, yeah, you'll only be in debt for a little over 2.5 years. Yeah, that's not bad. That's great.
No, I could do that. I could make that. I could swing that. I could swing that. You know what else is great about Ting? No contracts, no early termination. Just go to las.ting.com. Get your iPhone on the Ting network in no time. Ting don't care. They're honey badger about it.
And pay less for your bill than you do for your phone.
So about a year and a half ago, I was in a friend's garage and he was helping me with my car and I was selling some Bitcoin to pay for some furniture for my living room. And he asked me what Bitcoin was. So I explained to him what this thing called Bitcoin was. And he goes, oh, that's really cool. How did you get it? And I said, oh, I have a miner. I have a miner set up. And he goes, what's a miner? So I explained to him what a miner was. And he stops me and he says, wait a minute. Stop. Just hold on. Are you telling me right now that I can buy this box for $200 and plug it in my garage and it'll just sit there and make me money? And I'm like, no, that's not what I'm telling you. In fact, it will always cost you more money to run the thing than you'll ever make out of it. And you'll probably not even get your money back out of the box itself. And he goes, but I can plug the box in my garage and make money. I'm like, no. And he's like, is there a chance that that could happen? I'm like, there is a sliver of a possibility that will happen, but I am not recommending you do this. So he buys a 2 terahash miner for $200 off of eBay and plugs it in and ends up mining about a Bitcoin and a half or something like that, right? So he was out at the lake with us and I was talking to him and I said, hey, do you still have that Bitcoin that you mined? And he goes, yeah, somewhere. I don't look at it. I'm like, dude, You need to go reset your account password. You need to log in and check that thing. So he goes, he called me today and he goes, no, I need your help right now. I said, okay, what? Calm down. What's up? And he's like, I logged into my account and I got all this money. I got $1,000. I'm like, just calm down. He goes, well, I need to get it. I said, this is going to pay for my plane tickets because he's going to a friend's wedding and the friend's wedding is on a cruise ship. And he's been trying to figure out how he's going to come up with the money to pay for this cruise ship. So it turns out, the amount of Bitcoin that he had mined more not only paid for his miner and the electricity bill, but also covered his cruise tickets and a little bit of money to spare. Well, I had to be the bearer of bad news and tell him that in order to get it out, he's got to link his bank account, and that's going to take 3 days. So today, the test deposits finally went through, and at this point, he has given me the login to his bank account. He's given me the login to his Slush Pool, to his Coinbase account. He's like, I just want you to make all this happen as fast as possible. So he gives me all this stuff. So today,
saying the 4th of July barbecue. And this Jupiter Broadcasting's on you.
This is the story of how Noah became a bank owner.
Exactly, right? No, he told me. He's like, well, I guess you have all the information you need to steal my Bitcoins. And I'm like, yeah, I got this far to steal them from you. So, but the test deposits came through and money, I just got the confirmation just while we were sitting here talking that the transfer has gotten initiated. The Bitcoins are sold and the money's going to be in his account on Tuesday. So it worked out. But here's the thing. Since the dawn of time, I have consistently told everyone around me that I've never gotten into Bitcoin for the monetary aspect, and I've never expected it to make me any money. And yet, over time and time again, every time I buy a piece of Bitcoin hardware, I always end up, it gets paid for, and then I always have a bunch of extra. It just happens to work out that way. And I agree, I've probably just gotten very, very lucky, but it's definitely worked out.
So today, The Economist called Bitcoin a quote-unquote healthy bubble, and CNBC said it could get up to $10,000.
I don't know. I hear it's a terrorist currency.
To be honest, I think if it ever gets to $10,000, it's dead.
It doesn't matter. The Russians will see all your money.
What are you positive about? What are you positive
all
about?
I'm saying, Chris, is both you and I have had this experience.
That's
2 out of 3.
I agree.
I was going to let him skate by with this, but now that it is coming up again, I'll just go ahead and throw this out there. I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. Did we all catch when Rakai accused Chris of being self-deprecating?
I caught it. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Just wanted to make sure we're on the same page.
I didn't catch it. What the hell's going on?
What is the biggest thing you're positive about? What do you feel good about? Like, what's going to go well?
Life pretty much just sucks right now.
Oh, Rakai. I feel like I want to help you through that. Like, I don't know what to do about that because, like, I feel like there's so many things I feel like are going well.
Such as?
My kids. Bitcoin could be another one. The Linux desktop would be another one. I mean, like, I have so many.
I feel like you said you wanted to help me, but then you're listing things that are good for you.
No, no, I'm just trying to tell you, like, I recognize that we are in a post-Bernie Sanders didn't win, like, the world sucks kind of reality. But at the same time, I 100% recognize there are things that are going really well.
I really don't see too much that's going well.
I mean, I can see where you're coming from, for sure. Like
the things that like I do enjoy.
Big picture stuff, right?
The things that I do enjoy, the internet. Our government could be screwing that up,
right?
As we speak,
net neutrality could be getting screwed with. Plus, you got Correct the Record and all these different groups that have.
We get a president that's trying to go to war with apparently everybody. It feels like anyway. Didn't he just pull out of that
the Paris Accord?
Yeah,
it obviously doesn't matter. Like none of us know, but yet there is an emotional response associated with this event. But none of us on the call right now, because when we're recording. Know if it's happened, but yet we have established an emotional response to it.
Well, no, because I'm like 85-90% sure it's happened.
Or it will happen.
Yeah. I actually think I might have posted links to it in the unfiltered Slack.
Let's pretend for the moment it has happened.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, that aside, like, the only thing I currently feel like I have to look forward to is that I am planning to get a house. I am saving money to get a house. And I'm planning to move in with someone. But that's in the future. And between here and then, it feels like life just pretty much sucks.
You know what? I have an idea for you, Rikai. One of the things that I do when I'm trying to accomplish big tasks, large goals, that especially if they're going to span a lot of time, one of the things I'll do that really helps me is I will break it up into
into smaller goals. Yeah, I'm already doing that.
And then I set those a time limit so that I can reach that specific goal. So like, well, I'll give you an example. We're doing the roof on our house, and I needed to save up about $10,000 to do the roof. And one of the things
I'm gonna stop you right there because this is already stuff that I'm doing.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So hold on. So talk about it then. So what are some of the goals that you have reached, or what have you done to celebrate when you hit those goals? Because that's something that always makes me like, oh yeah, I hit my first.
What did you do to celebrate?
Me?
What did you do to celebrate?
So when we were doing the riff on our house, when we got to every time we'd get to $1,000, we'd all go out and we'd have this this big family dinner, and we're talking about like how great it's going to be when the roof didn't leak. it was great because
The difference is, Noah, the people I'm reaching this goal with are thousands of miles away. I can't just go out and hang out with them.
Yeah, that's true. But you could do other things. Like you could, order the best kind of pizza that you have and do like a Skype call or something. There are ways you can.
Waste a bunch of money towards the next goal. Sure.
Jeez, dude.
I'm just being realistic. Like,
no, you're being pessimistic. It's okay. Here's the thing.
Pessimistic.
Because it's
like,
not necessarily
small amount of money to order out.
So here's the thing. There is value to taking some time and money for yourself. That's not a waste of money to spend some money to say, you know what, I'm gonna celebrate this thing. Maybe even plan for that. I'm gonna save up the first $1,000. I'm gonna save up the first $1,050. So I got 50 extra bucks to do this or whatever.
Dude, okay. All right. So
this is Noah's middle class talking to me. I'm not even joking.
You got to talk about stuff like in $10, $15, $25 increments, because Rikai and I are the kind of guys where sometimes there's days where we're not sure how we're going to pay for things that we absolutely have to have.
That's fine. Pizza's $25, right? No, maybe not.
I mean, so I completely agree with you in some regard, but on the other hand, I totally see where he is coming from because that's where I'm at right now. And so I can completely relate with that. Like, I got a tank of gas. Hopefully that tank of gas lasts me until the 15th. And as we record this, it's the 1st. So hopefully that works out. I get 16 miles to the gallon.
I've been there. I've been there. I mean, when I started AltaSpeed in 2009, I think we found out February of 2010 or March of 2010 that Sarah was pregnant. So here I am, 2009, from December till January, I had not taken in a single dollar. And then in December, I had to send a check to the state government for $250 to tell them that I didn't take in a single dollar. And so there I sat halfway through January, and I maybe had $100 or something that had come in. And then we get to February, and I finally have enough money to pay the electrical bill that month, because I was about a month behind at that point. And then I find out that we're pregnant, we're having a kid, and I'm like, oh great, this is gonna work out fantastic. So I have been there where it's like every little dollar counts. I have, but to be fair, it has been a while.
I want to entertain them, and this is a bit of a downer, and I apologize, and it's not Linux, and there's no GNU, and Richard Stallman isn't advocating this position, but I want to entertain the idea for a second that it's not possible in some areas of the country. I don't think it's possible.
What is?
I living with what? A reasonable. So if you accept the modern reality, the post 2008 reality, which I believe to be the case, is entrepreneurs, aka people that have their own quote unquote small businesses, are self contracting, and that I think is going to represent the majority of the people that are out of the quote unquote workforce, because that is basically all that's available to them, especially people that work in knowledge jobs. And so you have this situation where you have all of these workers who are in quote-unquote knowledge jobs, who are working as contractors, who are their own self-employed businesses. And the reality of that, which I think is basically a huge percentage of the tech industry, the reality of that, I believe, is that there are some places where we just can no longer live. Well, sustainably.
Yeah, that's true. That's I agree with that. You know, if you
Fuck you, dude, because you live in Grand Forks, North Dakota, where gas is probably under $2 a gallon. Oh, yeah. We're here at $3 a gallon. Yeah. So yeah, it's nice for you to be able to say I believe that. Meanwhile,
I agree with
the
you.
Beard and I are living here in the Pacific Northwest, and it really fucking sucks.
No, I agree. But I guess part of that is like and I mean, it's a little different for you because, you know, you have kids and stuff like that. But like, yes, they're absolutely. If you look at an income level, you say, this is my income level. Yeah, there are certain places in the country where you just can't afford to live like that. I guess why I spoke up was it just seems like that's not something that's new. You know, 20 years ago, you still couldn't live in L.A. proper.
However, you need to consider that there is a particular industry in the areas where it is more expensive to live. And so when you have a particular area that you cover or that you work in,
it makes sense to be in that area for that industry.
Exactly.
Not if you can't afford to live there, though.
Well, that's the dichotomy.
Yeah.
Do you agree, Rika?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I want to go and I want to move into actual Seattle, which is insane. I understand that.
Which would be, to me, who makes more money than you.
Super fucking insane.
It would be impossible to me.
Basically, if I'm going to do that, I am going to have to figure out how to have two, possibly three jobs between me and the person I'll be living with just to be able to afford it. But I guess it's you got to figure out what you're willing to put up with to get what you want.
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
Been there, yeah.
And
yeah.
I feel like I want it enough that I'm going to give it a shot. If it doesn't work out, well, then I'm probably a little bit screwed, but I'll figure something out.
Mm-hmm.
But
at
least then I can say I tried it and it didn't work.
How do you make it obtainable, though, in the meantime, when you are at a point right now where even the prospect of finding the real estate and getting a mortgage seems huge? Like, how do you make it obtainable right now?
Well, as pretty much as Noah said, you just break it down into smaller goals and you try to cross off those goals one by one. Like, I figured if I'm going to do that, we're probably going to have to take out a loan to get a mortgage. And to do that, we have to clean up our credit. So currently we're working on cleaning up our credit.
So you're taking like steps like that.
Yeah.
Get the credit cleaned up, get something established there.
Yep.
Man, I wish there was a way to hack this.
It's a whole lot of steps.
Yeah,
it makes you hate life.
Yes.
But I feel like the goal at the end is worth it, so I'm going to do it.
I don't know if I agree, though. That's the problem. Like, as somebody who has owned two homes, has done the three kids, had the wife.
It might not be the thing for you, but I feel like
that's
is the
possible.
Thing to me.
Yeah. What are you going to say, no?
Exactly what he just said. It's perception. I'm more on your side than I am on his side on it. Is in that I think that I spent a large majority of the beginning of my adult years pursuing what I thought was going to be the ultimate life, which was the biggest house I could afford with all the best electronics, with all the nicest appliances and a ton of room. And what I found was the amount of work that you have to do to be able to afford that kind of lifestyle is means that by the very nature of that just means that I didn't have I didn't get to enjoy it. I didn't have really any time to spend at home. I was working 5 in the morning till 7 or 8 at night. And so these days I have pawned a lot of that off on other people, and it means I take home a smaller paycheck. But my kid's last day of school, I was there to pick him up from school, and I was able to go out with ice cream with him, and I was able to do things. And to me, that's worth taking a significantly lower paycheck. And then you start to expand that out, and I go to the lake and I think, if I just measure happiness, I am much more happy sitting at the lake with Sarah and the kids in 200 square feet than I am at home in 4,200 square feet where, yeah, you know, life is chaotic and busy. And so it gets to a point where I start thinking like you think. I just buy a plot of land, put my trailer on there for the time being, maybe later build a house, and just be happy all the time. And then, incidentally, it's way cheaper to live like that than it is to live inside the city. So, yeah, it's interesting life observation, I guess.
And I feel like I'm trying to think ahead of time to solve those kind of problems. Like, the person I'm going to be living with, she is also very much like me. She just likes being a homebody, likes being alone sometime, likes hanging out sometime. So we're planning to try to get jobs where we can work from home and we can just spend time together and we can kind of somewhat dictate our own schedule. So yeah, we might be sacrificing to do this, but at the same time, we're finding a way to make it also not completely destroy our lives.
And if the place where you live is also where you make your day-to-day income, it makes it more acceptable to pay a bit more. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like if this is your office, quote,
well, because you're saving money on commuting.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, you just can't quit the show.
No. Well, Chris,
you'll have
you
more
see,
life. You'll have more material Seattle, for the show.
If I move to Seattle, Chris, then we can just move all the studio equipment into my basement, and then we can have
the
studio
shows from the RV.
We'll have studio on gigabit. You can call in from the RV.
This is sounding better and better.
I feel like Peak Beard would be the conceptual beard. Peak Beard is the beard that is like leaving. He's left JB, and Peak Beard is leaving all this behind, but still connected and living all of this and now commentating on it. Like you have hand selected your replacement. You have trained them, put them in the position, and then moved on. And you're no longer that's Peak Beard.
So what you're telling me is that I'm a shitty editor and you want me to become a host instead?
Yes.
I'm down for this. Start up some more shows. Let's go.
Although, by shitty editor, I mean a great editor. But other than that, yes.
Fire up some more shows. I'm ready.
I think you should start a show, Beard.
I guess eventually I'm going to have to get on camera, huh?
No, not necessarily. I'm still...
Although you are winding down all the video shows.
Yeah, and I would be willing to bring like a fence in here, like a wood fence, if you wanted to stand behind that. I'd be willing to do that. I would make that
Do I need to change my name to Wilson?
No, here's what you do. You have a fence, and then you have a spot that's cut out for his beard.
You are
so
old, dude.
No, that's just 90s TV.
Yeah, man. That makes you old.
Also, how do you know I didn't watch you on Nick at Night in the 2000s?
I know you didn't. That's how I know. You were watching Lotso.
To be fair. Oh, that's true.
Guys, I am getting old, and I don't know what to do about it because I now...
Man, I feel like this episode we've really abused the viewers.
I know. I love them, too. It's really too bad. And they're actually... What's crazy about the viewers is...
Is we abuse them and they love us?
No, it's beyond that. They're legitimately the best people on the planet of the Earth. Like, yeah. I can't even describe to you the interactions I have and how fucking amazing they are. So it's too bad if it comes across like that. But I have to be honest with you. I can't remember now because I'm an old man and they all blur together. But I either got a telegram or a tweet. And I get so many of them that they... I don't know which one it was. But I got one of them. And the guy said to me, he said... Rikai saying he hated Noah at the end of the episode was the most depressing thing I've ever heard and made me want to kill myself.
Wow.
And I said, it was Telegram, because I said, oh, really? I thought it was hilarious. And then he said back to me, it was hilarious initially, and then I thought about it some more, and I wanted to die.
Man, are you sure you weren't talking to me?
No, it was somebody on Telegram. I remember now.
Chris, I'm on Telegram. To be clear to everybody out there, I love Noah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all love each other.
If that wasn't clear, that was a joke. Like,
if the beard told me tomorrow, he's like, Chris, you know what? I gotta change things up, and I gotta quit, and I'm gonna move on, and I don't want to have anything to do with Jupiter Broadcasting. I would still love you. I would still love, and same with Noah.
Well, you'd have to, because I'm going to be on the show.
Yeah, but no, yeah, right, exactly, because you can't quit this. Yeah. I will fucking kill you.
I will end you, Chris.
But, like, same with Noah. Like, if Noah's like, God damn, you know what, man, I really loved working with you. It's been great, but I got to move on. AltaSpeed's got to focus on, you know, just, you know, solving the help desk issues.
God damn it. He waited until I drank.
I would love Noah. I would love him, and I would still want to go to Montana and hang out.
See, that makes me happy, because one of the things I was worried about with the whole Ask Noah last ending or whatever, and I talked to Sarah about this more than once. I was like, man, I hope this doesn't put a wrench into our friendship at all, because you never know
man, I respect you more than ever, because, like, watching you do Ask Noah, I really respect the hustle there, because I see some of what I've done in that.
Yeah.
And I see the responsibility that I've taken in my shows there, and, like, I see you doing it, and what it means to me is, like, it makes you more of a peer, because you recognize the responsibility and you stepped up to it.
Mm-hmm. It just seems like there is, any time that there is large moving parts that are changing, there is the potential for disagreement. And anytime there's a potential for disagreement, there's the potential to reach an impasse. And, it was more than just a passing thought, but you know, part of it is that we've worked together enough that I think I have a pretty good idea of, like, don't do these things, and these things are probably okay, and these things are maybe in the yellow, but it's probably okay to push my luck a little bit. Like starting a show when you're not
like
in the studio.
Like launching when you launch the show, you mean those kinds
of
things?
Right, yeah, in a week when you're not in the studio. Yeah, mm-hmm. That would be a great example.
Episode 9 of Ask Noah, and I no cross-promo intended, was my favorite episode of the Ask Noah show. And I mentioned that to Noah. And he told me it was the episode he has done the least amount of planning for, which kind of serendipitously fits with our topic from last week.
So the last week, I was out at the lake for the 3 days. In fact, really, I left the lake the day of Ask Noah. And so obviously before I had left, I had decided on – I won't tell you what part of the show I planned and what part I didn't. But half of the show was planned before I ever left for the lake. The other half, I started working on, I'd say, probably late Saturday night. Worked on it a little bit. Worked on it for maybe a couple hours on Sunday. And then just kind of hit it real hard before I got on the air. But suffice to say, it wasn't even half the amount of planning that I would have done any other week. And as soon as I got off the air, you said, that was one of my favorite episodes. And I, having gone back and listened to it, I can clearly tell the parts where I am not quite sure where I'm going, what I'm saying. I can tell the parts that don't exactly match up, because I know what I'm listening for. And I'm like, man, just grates on me, because I know it wasn't prepared as much as it could have been. But I'm glad to see that it was pretty well received, not just by you, but by a lot of other people have come in with feedback and said, you know, that was a particularly good episode. So it does. It really kind of drives home this idea that sometimes there, you have to have enough spontaneity. You have to let your creative mind free up enough that it can do its thing, or you end up kind of killing it.
I want to share a little story with you guys. It maybe isn't RMS approved, but it sure is fun. Hadia's dad is in the business of owning and building hotels. And there's the Bellingham Airport. And he recently built a pretty swanky hotel next to the Bellingham Airport. And we happened to get a friends and family discount. $40 a night. Don't tell anybody. I can't. Nobody. Hey, Rikai, beep this out. $40 a night.
Well, that's the benefits of being with the employer.
Yeah. And it was nice. I mean, like, you know, like, it had a steam room, a sauna, a decent pool. I had a really nice restaurant, room service, nice hotel, very swank. In fact, I think it's where the Linux Fest crew should definitely stay next year. It's the best hotel in Bellingham. It's so great. And we're staying there, and the kids are loving it. We're having a good time until the middle of the night. And the power went out. The power went out. In fact, they went out at the airport. It went out in most of Bellingham, Washington. The power went out.
And you left your hotel and went to the RV.
Well, it was funny because they had a generator, but the generator kicked in and, like, a lot of stuff didn't work. Like, the lights that the kids wanted on didn't work. It was like this perfect, serene moment. Everything's going great. And we're like, hey, look at us. We're not staying in the RV tonight. And then the power went out. And the kids in the middle of the night freaked out because their little nightlight had gone out, and I didn't get any single at all moment of sleep.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
When the power first went out, was there like any part of you that was like, the autogenic? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Actually, it's funny you say that. So this is how I knew the power was out, because of course I wake up in the middle of the night and it's dark and I don't realize the power's gone out because I'm in a hotel, and that's not something that happens. So I'm like, I gotta take a middle of the night shit. Not something that normally happens, but this was something that was happening, just full disclosure. And I'm like, I'm gonna go take it.
You gotta spread yourself out in a nice fancy hotel.
And so of course I get up and it wakes up the little baby, and she's like, Daddy, it's dark. I don't like it this dark. And I'm like, I'm sorry, sweetie, I think the lights burned out. I don't know what's wrong. But Daddy's over here and he's gonna go take a shit, and I will make sure I get some light on for you. And I'm thinking, like, what am I gonna do? Because the lights aren't turning on. But the RVer in me is like, not persuade for a second. Like, I noticed the RV's on, or the RV. I noticed the microwave is on. This is the same situation that happens in the RV with the kids. I'm like, oh, well, the microwave's on right now. I'll open up the door to the microwave because there's a light in the microwave oven, and that'll be your nightlight, young lady. There you go. And so I'm like, there you go. Daddy solved the problem. I'll go take my poop now. And I'm sitting on the toilet, and I'm finally relieving myself of a load that I have consistently earned throughout the day, I really have to say. And I noticed that the microwave is sort of every 30 seconds, because yes, I'm OCD, is dimming. The light in the microwave is dimming and then picking back up. Dims and picks back up. And I'm sitting here taking a poop for a couple of minutes, and I go, huh, that's weird. I'm in a building.
That seems like it's on generator power.
And that thing's acting just like it would in my RV right now. That is so weird. Huh. Well, let me finish what I'm doing here. And I'm sitting here going, huh, it's really hot in here. It's like 75 degrees in here, and I have the thing set to 72. Huh. Wait a minute. I don't think we have any power. Like, it takes me like this long. Like, I've talked to Bella about the nightlight being out. It hasn't occurred to me. I've assumed we've burned out the light because that would be our luck. And so I've opened the microwave. And now I'm taking a poo on the toilet. And I'm sitting there watching this microwave dim every 30 seconds. And it takes about a solid 2 minutes before I go, I think the power's out.
I mean, to be fair, it did toss you a red herring because the microwave had power.
Yes. Like, out of all of the things, right, you're going to give power, like, to put it to the lights, maybe. You put it to the phone. Maybe you put it to the alarm clock. You give power to the microwave?
Especially in a hotel where you can just order room service.
It seems really strange. Out of all of the things in the room that was working, the microwave was working.
I guess that says something about America.